Today on Peace Talks Radio, our guest is Ereshni Naidu Silverman, the Senior Program Director for the Global Transitional Justice Initiative at the International Coalition of Sites of Conscience. Ereshni, firstly, can you explain what exactly a Truth and Reconciliation Commission is? How do they work?
It's a truth-seeking tool that aims to set the historical record straight. So it's in that sense, it's backward-looking. But it's forward-looking in that it aims to, it enables people to imagine a new future based on peace and justice.
Okay, thank you. And the most famous example of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission is South Africa, which has generally been considered to be a success. We're now a quarter century out from that process. What has actually happened as a long-term result?
So the South African Truth and Reconciliation process, as you said, has been celebrated globally. However, increasingly, there's been more and more criticism of the process itself. For starters, it had a very limited definition of human rights violations. So it focused on civil and political rights violations and ignored economic, social, and cultural rights. And much of apartheid was based on racial segregation, but also an unequal division of resources between white South Africans, black South Africans, Indians, and in South Africa, what biracial people were called coloreds. It was also, the amnesty clause was also problematic. So it offered people, perpetrators, an opportunity to come forward to share the truth about whatever acts they perpetrated in exchange for amnesty. However, many perpetrators came forward, shared partial truths, often with very little remorse, and there was a burden placed on survivors to forgive the perpetrators and kind of move on. The success of truth commissions is often judged on the way victims are treated and often the delivery around reparations particularly. And to date, there are thousands of victims in South Africa that are still fighting for reparations.
And you said at the beginning of your response there that globally it has been widely celebrated. So the criticism that you're speaking of, is that more internally inside of South Africa, or is that shifting globally as well?
No, it's global. I think at that time, the reason it was so celebrated is that it was one of the few truth commissions that was public. So it was on national television. They had offered amnesty. It offered a platform for victims to come forward. It was very innovative in multiple ways. Years later, we still see that the Truth Commission didn't do much in terms of repairing. So, for example, almost 2 years ago in South Africa, there was intercommunal violence between black South Africans and Indian South Africans. And much of this came from the fact that some of the economic issues in South Africa are still widely unaddressed. In addition to that, there's constant media reports about xenophobic attacks against other African nationals by South Africans. Again, also based on the perceived economic disparities between South Africans and African nationals. So there's a perception that African nationals are coming to South Africa, taking away jobs. And lots of this goes back to the Truth Commission, because the Truth Commission did not address the economic issues that came with apartheid. So they weren't addressed. And I think apart from looking at South Africa, there's more and more critiques by practitioners working in the field, academics, that transitional justice in lots of ways is unable to address some of the root causes of conflict. So it does it very superficially, and it's also a very political process. So it depends on who's in power, the political will towards implementing the recommendations. So as I said, there's criticism that it does not address root causes. And in lots of conflict contexts, as well as authoritarian contexts, economic issues, social, cultural issues are key to the human rights violations. And that continues to not be addressed through transitional justice processes.
Arashni, we want to talk also about some less well-known examples of Truth and Reconciliation Commissions. So let's start with the Gambia. In 2017, the Truth, Reconciliation, and Reparations Commission was set up to investigate abuses under the leadership of President Yahya Jammeh, which lasted from 1994 to 2017. What was the outcome of this process?
So one of the positive things about truth commissions is that it aims to uncover a past. And in lots of conflict situations, as well as in authoritarian situations, as in the case of Gambia, there's lots of silences in the society. So things are hidden. People refuse to talk about acts that were perpetrated. Often victims are living, continue to live next to the perpetrator in lots of contexts. And what transitional justice, the truth commissions do is that they allow for these silences to be broken and for some of the shame and taboo around some of this to be resolved. So that's what happened in the Gambia context as well. It was able to uncover some of the truths that happened under the Jammeh regime. Similar to other truth commissions in other contexts, there were challenges. And one of the challenges of that commission was that, and this is also similar to the South African truth and reconciliation process, is that there weren't spaces made for women's testimony. So in the South African process, for example, they hadn't thought about how women were going to testify. And so women came forward testifying about their husbands, about their brothers, their sons as victims, but didn't testify about things like conflict-related sexual violations that they experienced. So after much advocacy from local women's groups, the South African Truth Commission set up special women's hearings for women to testify about their experiences of violations. Similarly, in Gambia, there was very little thought that went into how women were going to testify. So there were local partners. One of our local partners called Women in Liberation that set up women's listening circles for women to share their experiences of what happened. And this happened concurrently as the Truth Commission was going on. So that, for example, is one of the challenges and shortcomings that we've seen in a few Truth Commissions to date.
I wanted to ask you now about Colombia. As part of the peace agreement reached in 2016 between the Colombian government and the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, who had been in conflict since the 1960s, a Truth and Reconciliation Commission was to be created. What progress has happened there?
So that Truth Commission has only recently been completed, and the report was released, I think, towards the end of last year or early this year. Again, what was different about that Truth Commission as compared to previous commissions, which is interesting, as we start looking more and more into climate change, environmental rights, that kind of thing, is that the Colombian Truth Commission cited the land, Mother Earth, as a victim of the conflict. So I suspect that would be something that we would be seeing more in Truth Commissions in the future, particularly, I think, if indigenous communities advocate for something like that. With the Columbia Truth Commission, there was also quite a few challenges. Particularly, there was a lack of will from the government to move forward with the Truth Commission process. And as a result, the military, the prosecutor's office, refused to provide information to the Truth Commission. The Truth Commission was also unable to access outlying areas. So, for example, the Global Initiative for Justice, Truth, and Reconciliation supported local communities to undertake their own truth-telling initiatives, again, parallel with the Truth Commission, so that there were multiple truth-telling projects happening at the same time. What the Columbia Truth Commission did, however, was to help set a new vision for peace in Colombia.
Hmm. And you mentioned also Sri Lanka and that this was an example of where it didn't happen. Can you explain what you meant by that?
There was a co-sponsored UN resolution to promote truth, justice, and reconciliation in Sri Lanka soon after the new government came into place. While there were processes that were being put in place, again, there was limited political will because that whole initiative was undertaken as a political strategy. So that's another thing that we find in lots of contexts is that there's this almost a regression, a political backsliding of not implementing recommendations that came out of peace agreements or negotiated settlements, that kind of thing. So Sri Lanka right now is still dealing with the big issue of missing and disappeared persons. There's rampant impunity in the military, for example. There's constant surveillance and harassment of human rights defenders. And the mothers of the disappeared are still fighting to hear the truth about their missing loved ones. So there is talk again of a transitional justice process happening, whether that means a truth commission or a commission for the missing persons, a reparations committee. That was initially an idea. However, civil society in Sri Lanka and those of us working in Sri Lanka are not sure whether that would happen and whether that's feasible at the moment as well.
Joining us today on Peace Talks Radio is Ereshni Naidu Silverman, the Senior Program Director for the Global Transitional Justice Initiative at the International Coalition of Sites of Conscience. Ereshni, how can transitional justice processes be evaluated? How do we know whether or not they worked in the examples that we've been discussing?
There's been more and more written recently about whether transitional justice fulfills the goals that it aims to achieve. There's been criticism that transitional justice processes are time bound, and we found that in our work as well. Given that they time bound, they very resource intensive in terms of human resource as well as financial resources. They tend to focus on a narrow sliver of what actually happened in the past, and tend to fulfill political negotiations or political needs. So there is increasing questioning about whether transitional justice actually works. The problem as well is that in terms of evaluation, while you can evaluate the short-term results of a transitional justice process like a truth commission, the fact is that transitional justice goals of truth, justice, and reconciliation actually happen over a long term and may even happen over generations. And so it's difficult to assess whether it's it's been successful or not. But as I said, there are certain indicators, for example, whether it was victim-centered, whether it was locally owned, whether survivors and victims received reparations, whether they were treated in a specific way in terms of, was there a consultative process, were they included in the process, were women included. So I think we can set up a list of indicators for short-term success, but in terms of longer-term success, that's a little bit more difficult to assess.
And are there also negatives of transitional justice processes? So beyond if, you know, certain factors have been left out of the process, or if it is difficult to see the impacts over time, are there any potential bad outcomes, or have there been examples of bad outcomes?
I don't have any specific examples, but what truth commissions do, and I think the broader transitional justice process, whether you're looking at institutional reform, prosecutions, reparations, truth-seeking, is that it sets up expectations, particularly for survivor and victim communities. And what needs to happen during that process is that survivor and victims' expectations need to be managed. There's generally a perception that we're going to go through a truth commission process. We're going to uncover the truth. There's going to be a report. We're going to get reparations. We're going to get recognition. I think that's something that lots of victims look for, is recognition that they have been harmed. There has been a wrong done. And in some cases, they don't get that recognition. In lots of contexts that I've worked, I found that often victims only want somebody to listen to their story and want somebody to recognize that there has been a harm done. And in lots of communities, victims are ostracized for the violations that they experienced. And truth commissions sometimes don't often fulfill those expectations and needs of survivors.
Okay, thank you. This program also looks at Norway as a case study, which is the most recent example of a national commission established in a Western democratic country to look at abuses against indigenous populations rather than following conflict and transitions of power. Norway is following Australia, Canada, and Greenland, who have had similar commissions. Is this a new trend in transitional justice, and do you expect to see more of this?
Yes, I suspect that this is a trend in the field. As the U.S. starts looking into its own past, looking into how indigenous peoples were decimated in the U.S. and the continued mistreatment of indigenous populations, I think Guatemala also looked at it to some extent. And as I said, Colombia, through the advocacy of indigenous communities, started looking at the earth as a victim of conflict. So I think more and more there is a movement towards looking at indigenous populations.
Okay. And we do, of course, have to talk about the U.S. now. With another guest, I discussed the use of local commissions in the U.S., but does the U.S. need a national commission? One aspect could be about the indigenous population, as you mentioned. And then, of course, there's the issue of race relations in the U.S. and the history of slavery. Do we need a national commission for this? And also, could it work in the American context?
So in an ideal world, yes, there would be a commission. I think partly to, again, break all those silences, uncover the denial, because there's lots of denial in the U.S. We see this in the media regularly. And also call out the bystanders, which is what the South African Truth Commission did as well, where there's a group of people that say, we didn't know it was happening, when they benefited from the discrimination, from the violations. So I think it would be useful to have one in the US. However, that said, I'm not sure if it's logistically possible. Right now, we're seeing a proliferation of local commissions at different levels, at the local government level, at the state level. California is kind of leading with its reparations task force. I think because the states themselves and the way the U.S. Is set up as a federation is that it's difficult because each state has very particular needs, and there's multiple groups of survivors and victims, right? So we would go as far back as slavery, looking at slavery, but more recently racial injustice, police brutality, that kind of thing. So there's a broad range of violations that we could look at in each community and in each state. So ideally, there would be multiple commissions set up alongside each other that to fulfill one kind of national goal around justice, truth, and reconciliation that actually meets the needs of local communities, because each context in the U.S. is so different.
Is there any momentum towards that, towards coalescing more local and regional processes into a coordinated national process? Is there any movement on that?
Not that I'm aware of. I know that so Representative Barbara Lee and Cory Booker were both trying to push forward bills, one to look at the study of reparations and another for a truth commission, and both of those have not been successful. I think there's no real political will to move any bill forward because it's such a divisive topic in the U.S. However, that should not be a reason for why we should not move forward on uncovering some of the truths and injustices of the past and finding a way to move forward.
Okay, thank you. Arashni, those are all the questions that I wanted to ask you. Is there anything I missed or anything you wanted to add?
Cool. I think the only thing I would like to talk about, the only other thing I made a note of is knowledge production. And so there's also been an increased criticism in the field of transitional justice about who produces knowledge around transitional justice and how that's used. And more particularly in our work is the Global Initiative for Justice, Truth, and Reconciliation. As an international organization, we're trying to provide a platform for local expertise to be raised, because local communities, local civil society organizations, they know exactly what they need, and they know exactly what how to move forward on certain issues, and it also creates ownership and sustainability of transitional justice processes. So while there's more discussion in the field about local ownership and knowledge production, I hope that that's another trend that we would be moving forward towards in the future.